Hello, everybody, and welcome to this special end-of-season NPL show dedicated to the Northern Premier League. And joining me here in a virtual pub cellar, a virtual Heat and Hops, not in North Stockport, stroke South Manchester, we've got the finest people in virtual world who can discuss just what on earth is going on in the world of non-league football right now. Mr. Ian Burke is here from 26-0.
Hello, Ben.
Hello. James Hayes is here, social media officer for the Northern Premier League.
Afternoon, Ben.
Mr. Andrew Simpson's here, non-league reporter from the wonderful county that is Cheshire.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. And joining us live from Belgium, Swampy's back, everyone.
Hi, everybody. A quick question. I've noticed as you've got around the gentlemen, they all seem to be in different time zones. One said good morning, one said good afternoon. I'm the only person in a different time zone. What's going on?
What day is this? Oh, we should say we're recording this on Saturday lunchtime, to coincide with the playoff final day. But, Burke, I'll come to you first, because you were predicting South Shields would win the league by 10 points.
Well, they were already there, weren't they? Yeah. Come on, I was right.
You were.
It doesn't need to be said, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's a shambles that they ended it as soon as they did. I mean, when you're three quarters of the way through the league, I think you kind of have to find a way to plough on. I can fully understand why with all contracts and this, that and the other for the players, but surely there'd be mechanisms in place to be able to temporarily extend them. And I think we've kind of missed the trick by going so early with it. You look at the Premier League, I mean, they're looking to restart again behind closed doors. I'm not a fan of that idea at all. I just don't think there's anything wrong with waiting it out for a few months if needs be, and then restarting so you can have the promotions and relegations. It makes a farce of the entire season, which is a point that Simo's been making for a while now. People have been trying so hard from August, actually before August, with pre-season as well, to get everything right, and then it's taken away. There's no reason, I don't think, why you just couldn't pause it and start again at a later date.
I think personally that, if you look at the last game that we all played, I mean, I think that was a game too far anyway. I think they should have been cancelled before then. I think the problem has been that there's not been no real understanding of exactly what's going to happen. I mean, here in Belgium, the league decided to stop, and they made it official that a team would win the division, and then that's it, done. So everyone knew. So basically, the season's all over. We've got champions, and therefore we wait till we start again. In this country, the problem has been that we've not actually made a full decision yet. The Premier League are doing one thing. The EFL would want to do another thing. Maybe the Northern League want to do another thing. The NPL have done another thing, and it's all wrong. It's dead, dead simple, this. All they should do is one thing: promote two teams going up and relegate two teams going down. Tough. That's it. It's done. We all know where we are. Some will like it, some won't like it, but at least it's a decision that's been made.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It's like no one wants to kind of be accused of ultimately making a decision and then the wrong decision. Everyone's looking around at everybody else for a steer on what they should do. I mean, you asked me on one of the shows we did the other week about how Rugby Union had handled it, and again, it's been very much top down from the RFU kind of working on the mechanism to end the season. Although even in Rugby Union, there's been a nuance because the Premiership stands apart from the rest of the game. But yeah, you're right. In Europe, there's been that kind of lead taken by the government and sports falling into line behind it. And it'll be interesting to see if that's how it works when sport resumes in those countries, because that's where the debate's going to move next. And we're starting to kind of have that here a little bit with professional sport of who ultimately is going to make the decision, who's responsible for the decision.
Yeah, it should have been a coordinated effort, Simo, from top to bottom, and it hasn't. I do think carrying on the league, that would have been, no matter when it comes back, that would have been my preferred option. But the second best option, I think, would have been just drawing a line under it and then having your promotion relegation spot sorted on points per game. There's going to be people out there who are experts in modelling this kind of thing. It's not just a case of team X has got X amount of points, team Y has got Y amount of points, but they played half a dozen games less, so they should win the league because of this. There's going to be modelling that you can do on it, and I think we've not been smart enough.
Personally, I think we should have stood under the reorganisation this year. That would have fixed you're looking at the news stories everywhere talking about the Premier League or 23 teams, which is highly unworkable. National League is still arguing about what they want to do. It comes down to the fact, obviously, there's about seven or eight different bodies in England that control the league. And obviously, the Northern Premier League, Southern. Obviously, you look at abroad, I mean, obviously, the French decided to award it. And all Belgium, I think they only have one weekend of the normal season before they have like a little playoff, don't they, for Europe? And
yeah. I think you're right, James. That for me, there's so many ifs and buts and whens and where's and why's and where's and how's and how for's and all that kind of nonsense. The one thing that we need to do, though, is we need to make sure that there is something set in stone, because this is going to happen again later in the year, maybe next year. This pandemic hasn't disappeared. It will come back. So we have to have something in place in order to actually be able to do that. Playing games behind closed doors doesn't work for me. I think it's a nonsense.
No.
The Premier League should have just basically said Liverpool have won it and they're champions and done and dusted. As much as it pains me to say that, but that's what should have happened.
I think Swampy's spot on, and this does worry me that...
I'm spot on.
Yeah, that came out wrong, didn't it? in that, unless something has got to be put in place, and some of the kind of the noises and some of the things that have been said by leading officials about this is very worrying, in that, you know, we've heard a chairman of another league say, oh, we think the rules are fit for purpose and you know, we don't need to fiddle with anything moving forward. This can never be allowed to happen again. A season can never be written off again. I think most people, even if they're unhappy with the decision, and I count myself among that, can have sympathy with the decision makers, because how could you possibly have planned for something like this? So, but what... That excuse is now gone. So when we move forward, whether it's a clause, I don't know how you do it, what form of wording, there has to be a mechanism inserted in the rules of what happens if and when a season is interrupted. And that rule needs to be the same for everybody. I mean, another disaster of what's happened in the past few weeks is we all thought we were part of one National League system, and it's been exposed that we're not. So Swampy's spot on. They need to give some serious thought to what kind of form of words or what will happen next time a season is interrupted, because it will happen.
Simo, we're still at this stage where, football-wise, when it comes to non-league, the National League is still deciding how they can finish the season. So
yeah, and actually, it is important to point that out, because even though it feels like a final decision has been made with regards to the Northern Premier League, which we're talking about today, the reality is that it isn't quite over yet. And the current position, as we record today, is, I think, that South Shields chairman Geoff Thompson is waiting to see how the National League decide to conclude their season before deciding on his next step. He's been very consistent on this. Not just South Shields, by the way, other clubs are also impacted, as we've discussed in previous weeks. And how the National League, or the direction the National League go in, will determine what decision the clubs are going to take next. And they've got a few options, both inside football and outside of football. So you're right, we kind of drifted on to talking about what might happen in the future, but there is, however small percentage chance there might be, there is a chance that at the very least the decision could be set aside and we have a new kind of look at it. I mean, that's probably their best shot if they're going to get this overturned. So watch this space on that. I think that'll evolve in the next couple of weeks.
I mean, to be honest, you would have thought that the leagues involved would have understood that there would have been some form of repercussions from clubs who were there at the top, and therefore the decision to be made is would have been a simple but cruel one for those at the bottom, and a simple one and maybe a little bit cruel for those at the top.
But James, wherever you look, whatever decision's made, there's going to be legal challenge, because even a club who gets relegated, if a club gets relegated, they're the ones who are going to launch that legal challenge, because...
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's going to be the same across the board. And this is what, coming back to before, when I was saying there's too many boards to decide things, it should have been everyone in the same room at the same time to decide. It's just that the fact, again, the FA gave the step 3 to 6 leagues 2 days to decide.
Such a rush?
That was my point, to be honest, as well. The fact is, why did they rush into it? I think the FA just wanted it done and dusted. You know, the lower league clubs, we can get them sorted out very, very quickly. Done that, very fair enough. And the rest of us, the Premier League and everyone else, can sort themselves out at a later date. It should have been rushed. It should have been done in a professional manner.
And Simo, you're going to hate me for this. but I'm gonna use the phrase. This is unprecedented.
Oh!
But with a caveat, Ben. But not. No. But after this, it won't be, and therefore there needs to be a precedent set where we decide this a lot better as a game.
Well, I was gonna throw out that. I mean, you're right, but I was going to throw out to everybody whether they understand, you know, what's their feeling? Do they understand why South Shields are doing what they're doing? They might not necessarily. I mean, South Shields have had a lot of grief for this, by the way. They've had a lot of heat from within football and outside. But do people kind of have some sympathy with why they've done it, even if their clubs took a different...
I think you're right, Simo. It's South Shields have been left high and dry with this. And other clubs as well. You look further down, we all know about Jersey and Vauxhall Motors, etc. And there's going to be other clubs down further down the pyramid too who are on the cusp of getting promoted as well. They've put a lot of effort in there. They've put the finances behind it. And I don't want to say, oh, it's a big gamble to do this, because you should be working within your means and working within your budgets and not risking the future of the club. And I don't think that's what South Shields have been doing. Same goes for Vauxhall and Jersey. And for it to be taken away on a rash decision, which didn't have to be made that quickly at all, it does leave the door open for legal action. And whether it's at the top of the table or at the bottom of the table.
But you look at South Shields, you look at Liverpool, you look at Leeds United, you look at Vauxhall Motors and Jersey, and you go, yep, yeah, that's yours, help yourself. But you look at Stamford and Leek, you can't make that call about who's won that league and who's got promoted. So
no, you can. You can. You have to. You have to make a call. I mean, or you just basically done what we do. Right, okay, everything's nil and void. You've got to make a call.
No, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. I mean, you could go points per game or you could go nil and void, but I think you can understand the reasoning for nul and voiding, though, surely, Swampy?
No, I can't see the reason for nul and void at all, because all the hard work that's put in place. Now, I'm going to go back on what I said. Actually, it might have been an idea just to promote teams, the two top teams in the divisions, and not relegate anybody. So you get an extra two teams in that division for a season. It'll all work.
It would only be National League or League Two, something like that. I would have done it, because obviously you're promoting your two and then taking the two up. So it would, that's what I'm saying. Personally, I think we should still have gone out with the reorganisation, because that eighth division would have sold in all the teams from step five.
Well, Swampy's spot on. In normal circumstances, we've seen teams get relegated or promoted by a goal. I know I reported on the season 06-07 when Witton Albion missed out on the title by a goal. So to say, oh, we can't use points per game because it's too close to call is ridiculous. I mean, very quick example to put one of my other hats on, Norwich Rugby Club have been promoted by half a point. Half a point based on the way in which the RFU worked out. And the team that missed out, Altrincham, they've accepted it. They can see how it's been worked out, how you've reached those figures at the end, and Norwich were just slightly better. So it's mad to say, oh, it's too close to call, the margins are too fine. Well, yeah, that's what happens.
There needs to be contingency now put into the league rules for future possible occurrences of this kind of thing happening. It may never happen again in our lifetimes, and I hope it doesn't, of course, but something has to be there in black and white so that people know that when you get to a certain stage of the season, it's going to be decided in this way or that way. And there's no grey area about it. It's just that's what happens and everyone agrees to it at the start of the season. So there's no comeback.
And
Turkey, but who is going to agree to that, though? That's the problem we've got at the moment. As we've alluded to, there are already seven or eight different boards and different organisations within football. So who's going to make the ultimate decision of everyone coming together and having one plan? I mean, you know, contingencies are okay, but it sounds to me as if the contingencies will be individual leagues yet again, opposed to one national structure for the benefit of all.
I mean, well, why can't they just talk to each other for once? Well, is that so difficult?
Yeah, well, apparently it is, Birke. And I'll come to
I'll come to you,
James, for this bit, because you know the workings of committees and that kind of thing. Given what's at stake here, and you know, we heard from Calton Town this past week, and you know, they, if it wasn't for that grant, they were looking at a real problem with regards to the ground and that side of things. And we've seen what's happened to Rill, and the, you know, it's there could be this could this if it carries on, there could be a fair few clubs like this. Surely it needs a government intervention here to say, right, we're going to bank heads together here and come up with a solution to this.
Again, it's just coming back to the fact there's so much division in football itself. It's that's a major statement, but I mean, obviously, clubs have already got access to certain grants through Football Foundation, and Sports England have been involved as well, which don't normally involve themselves in football at all. So obviously the situations that come in and Sport England is something that comes directly from the government too. Going back to what we were saying before, this is something no one's ever experienced.
I'm not necessarily talking about the money side of things. I'm more talking about how.
Listen, Ben. If government got involved in this, goalkeepers would be playing with one glove.
Goalkeepers
be playing with one glove. Yeah. No, you don't want the government anywhere near it.
I was referring to the fact that there's no central body here making an overall decision for everyone. And
the FA isn't doing its job properly. Got two words for you, Swampy. Summer football.
Yay!
We've got the perfect opportunity to introduce it now. There's no reason on earth we can't do it. Banish the ghost of Victorian sportsmen who wouldn't play in the summer because of the cricket season.
What about cricket? What about bowls?
You can play bowls anytime, sorry, day or night, indoor or outdoor.
Sorry, gents. What about rugby league? Just thrown out there.
Exactly.
James.
There's a great example. Rugby league moved from a winter sport to more of a summer sport, and it's thrived ever since. Mm-hmm. So football certainly could do that as well. And they could. You're just thinking about your job. I know. they could coexist. They could coexist. Rugby league and football at the same time of the year would coexist, no problem at all. Behind closed doors, very quickly, I mean, Berkey is a big fan of WWE wrestling. And if you watch behind closed doors WWE wrestling, it's absolutely awful. I mean, they're still coming out pretending there's a crowd there, and they're doing all the ritual beforehand. And then they get in, all you can hear is them grunting. And it's absolutely pointless.
Wrestling's slightly different because you're only talking, you need 10 people in that big arena to make that happen. Whereas a football match doesn't even cover one team. I mean, it's just not realistic, is it? Simo, we've discussed this before, I know, but it just seems indulgent to talk about having any form of sport, given the fact that there's nurses who can't get tested at the moment.
That's completely right. Although we have seen this week someone putting forward, a doctor from the World Health Organization putting forward a theory that actually there is some logic to grassroots sport returning first because the numbers that attend tend to be smaller, and therefore is it going to be easier to have the physical distancing? I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but Teagot was spot on. We saw a little window into that on the 14th of March when Premier League and EFL fixtures were called off. And what did people do? They said, oh, brilliant, I'll go and watch a non-league game. And the numbers supported that there was a spike in attendances at national league games. And I think the Northern Premier League, Premier Division as well, had really good attendances. Obviously, the headline game up at South Shields, undoubtedly that gate was boosted as well by people going, I'll go and watch football somewhere else then. So even though in theory you can say smaller crowds, can we manage that better in terms of having a gathering? People are going to rock up who wouldn't normally rock up because they want to watch some sport, and then you're suddenly very quickly overwhelmed.
Well say you limit it to 50 people at a game. You've got 50 people on the bench, essentially. You know, best part of it anyway, you've got at the game, you'll have 18 footballers from each side, so there's 36. You'll have two managers, you'll have two assistant managers, probably four coaches, maybe six coaches, depending, you know, physios, etc. You've got 50 before you've even started.
When you include ball boys and essential staff as well on a match day, that's all the 50 immediately.
But there's a thing to bear in mind as well, is if there are supporters, let's say it's limited to 50 to 100, even 500 as they were talking about.
Yeah.
You're going to have social distancing to get into the ground. So basically, it's going to take about 4 to 5 hours for everyone to get through.
How are you going to get through a turnstile?
Well, again, that's another thing, you know. I think until we just have to knock it on the head. All we should be doing now at the moment is concentrating on how we come out of it, what we've learned, and what we put in place to make sure that all clubs going forward are on the same hymn sheet and basically, if it happens again, we know what we're going to do, rather than just still talking about it and discussing it and not having any answers.
And Burke,
well, what I've learned, Ben.
Oh yes, go on, Burke.
What I've learned, Ben, is that Simo has got a lovely extractor hood.
Yes, behind him. Well, this is the difference between Greater Manchester and Cheshire, Burke. James, all he could do is open his window.
I've got a man who switches it on for me as well.
Oh, that's good. But just to finish this bit of the show up, because obviously that's been the main talking point. Going back to your point, Berkey, about, you know, could a decision have been made to carry on, not carry on regardless, but postpone things and then come back to this later? That's problematic in itself, isn't it? Going back to your original point right at the start of the show.
How?
Because we'll find that out when the National League, if they decide to do their playoffs, because a lot of their players will have gone or left the club.
Yeah. I mean, similar situation though with La Liga, that's looking to start again. Simo will know the date better than me, but they're looking to start again in the summer. I just think we've been too hasty. Not too hasty. It can, you know, postpone things. It was right, you know. In fact, as Swampy said, they probably should have postponed it the week before. But just to draw a line under it, it was way too soon.
Just quickly on that, Ben. One of the reasons that has been given for the speed at which the decision has been made is purely the financial element. And we've had some clubs in the Northern Premier League who've come out and given us an estimate, given us a feel for the potential hole in their finances that this has left or is going to leave by the time the dust settles. I mean, that in itself has been a really interesting thing to observe, and what the ramifications of that might be further down the line, because it's been quite startling to me how quickly clubs have run into financial problems. What it's taught me, and to come back to Swampy saying about learning lessons, is just how close to the wind some clubs must be sailing for, within such a short period of time, the financial impact to be magnified by such an extent. And I do wonder whether one of the natural consequences that we're going to see is clubs having a major rethink about how they structure their finances, how they put their budget together, how, and this is a good thing, by the way, because they should be doing this anyway, about how they kind of structure the financial well-being of their club. Because the season was going to run until the end of April anyway. So for people to be coming out and saying, I'm going to be 50, 60, 70, 80,000 pounds out of pocket is extraordinary, really, at this level.
So two things are going to happen here, as far as I'm concerned. Football at this level, no longer, or we'll be very wary to give people contracts because it's costing football clubs a fortune. Secondly, the intervention, again, should have come. No football club, really. They could do all the community work. FC United are doing it, Hyde are doing it, Matlock and everyone else are doing their community work. But that, and then relying on donations and help to keep the clubs afloat, it's a disgrace with the amount of money that's in football to be kept afloat, even though you're still doing community work and doing some great stuff in the community, helping out. I mean, I know FC have had a big profile in a lot of ways, and Granada reported a fantastic piece on them last week in regards to actually working in the community and sending out parcels of food and so on and so forth. But the other thing to bear in mind is a lot of these clubs as well have a lot older volunteers. Yeah. And maybe have the kind of volunteers. So they can't do the kind of things that FC United or maybe a Hyde or a club with a larger fan base can do. So there's a lot of clubs that are really, really struggling simply because they don't have, and if they did have the capacity and the people to help, they're normally people that actually, because we know there's, you know, within boardrooms and so on and so forth, there's a lot of elderly people within football. They're not capable of going out. They've probably actually been told to stay in because of, you know, they're an age where it's just not safe for them to do so. So as much as those clubs are doing fantastic work, there are a lot of clubs that can't do the work, and therefore there should be some intervention. The PFA should be involved as well, the Football Supporters Direct, Football Supporters Federation, and a few other bodies coming together to make sure that working class grassroots football clubs do not go to the wall. If we're prepared to bail out billionaire companies, we should be prepared to bail out and help working class football, grassroots football clubs. End of. It's very, very simple.
How does the Northern Premier League attack this? Because, you know, we've got the alliance system. We could speak with one voice at step three.
I mean, obviously, you look at the alliance leagues, there is a bit of unity between them. But yeah, Matt, well, that's going on in the background at the moment. People don't realise, again, especially more the fact as well, all three leagues have got to find a new main sponsor, which is, again, as we've mentioned before, is a massive blow.
Well, I don't know how we move on from this conversation, to be honest.
We should be, as I said, we should be in a situation. There should be a central pot, and it should be divvied up amongst all the clubs by now. And basically, then everyone is on a level playing field. Everyone has a certain amount of cash. Get them through this crisis, and therefore then move on. But it's not happening. That's the problem, because there's no central pot for our divisions and grassroots football. It's all about forget us and let's think about the top boys.
Birkett, just to throw a question your way. I mean, one of the pluses, which you know a lot of chairmen and a lot of people have been saying, the furlough scheme has been very, very helpful in keeping the wheels on the road. But generally, what's your take?
It's been very good, yeah, but it's only just started to come through, the money from it, and so I don't know how much of it the clubs will have seen yet. The point that Simo was alluding to with Warrington, the 70 grand black hole that they've got there, I mean, that's from predominantly going to be from their social club. It's not just, you know, open on match days like it is for most teams. It opens 7 days a week and it generates a lot of money for them. So they're, as well as match day income, they're missing out on arguably their prime source of income.
I think it's safe in saying that, you know, when we go back to our season preview show and the shows in August, September, and all the way through, well, you know, all you know, when you listen back to him, you got a bit of a tear in your eye for how naive we were thinking we could get the season finished. But one thing is for sure, this is the end of a season. And what season it's been. Just before we wrap up, because I think we are going to carry the show on. I'll speak to you, Simo, I think, when the National League decide what they're going to be doing in a week's time or whenever they decide. But just before we go, just your moment of the season, if I could be so bold. Judging by Swampy's face, I'll come to him last. Who wants to go first? Birke.
Right. I've actually got two. One of them was in a losing effort, but it was Alex Starchenko for Hyde United against Stalybridge Celtic. We lost that day 2-1, but he scored the goal of the decade in the last game of the decade. 35, maybe 40-yard drive. Outrageous. Went in off the top of the bar. No chance whatsoever for the keeper. And my second highlight was in the second game of the season, away to FC United, where Liam Tong made the greatest goal I've played, which I think has ever been committed in the world of football. How he did it, I do not know, but a diving overhead kick off the line when the ball, it was in, it was going in, and it was an incredible piece of athleticism and poise and reaction. Brilliant, and he became a cult Hyde hero instantly.
James, come to you now. Which of the 20 games you played against FC United this season has been your favourite?
Well, it's not the one on New Year's Day anyway, but I think, from about, obviously, as a Rafa perspective, it's basically the first part of our season. How on earth did we finish third on New Year's Day before we played FC United? From a league perspective, you've got to be looking at the quality of the league this year itself. There's never been really a team that's gone out and out and controlled the division. Yeah, South Shields might finish 9 points clear at this moment in time, and it was only down to the final game of the season, which could have an early title decider, the 5-3 South Shields FC United, which I'm calling game of the season. But the league's been that close. You look at how the league's developed over the season, and not just the Premier, the two side divisions as well. You had Leek and Stamford going head-to-head. The last day of the season could have been Stamford Leek for the South East title. Ramsbottom coming back the way they did as well. So that just shows what depth the league's had.
I think for me, highlights are Tunde Oluwabi. I think anyone that's watched him this season as a home supporter or as an away supporter, I've got to just think what a wonderful, wonderful goal scorer he's been. A player that plays with such a smile on his face, who's so humble, who is thankful for the club he's eventually found, realizing he should have never have left FC United, as he played for us at 16 years of age and went off in his merry way. However, I think any football supporter would have enjoyed watching him this season. But my ultimate highlight of the season is watching Luke Griffiths just play football. The guy is just absolutely beautiful to watch. I've not seen a player at our standard for a long time that just makes me smile and happy just watching the way he plays, because the kid has got absolute bags of talent. And there's many great footballers in this division, don't get me wrong, but just watching him is just beautiful to watch. And, you know, absolutely really, really pleased that he's made that step up and he's made it feel look so, so easy.
And Simo?
I would touch on a couple of things. Kind of one kind of moment of the season, I think, that really struck me was kind of how clubs in the Northern Premier League responded to the death of Jordan Sinnott, how it brought everybody together, the kind of way in which people wanted, you know, firstly what they thought of him as a guy, but then also kind of how football responded to something that was just so unbelievably sad and tragic was really, really striking and will stand out to me as a memory moving forward. A couple of things on the pitch. Best game I saw easily was the 6-goal game, Witten and FC United earlier in the season. Just had a little bit of everything in it. Great advert for the league. I think, you know, South Shields, I think by most measures, have been the best team in the league by a distance, but only one team's beaten them home and away.
I think
and I had to get that in. And the other thing that I would remark on is the success of managerial bounces. Nearly everybody that changed the manager shot up the table, which is extraordinary, isn't it? But that's been really striking of how the impact that's had.
And just to finish things off by saying, when it comes to, you know, because it's looking like, but barring some kind of, you know, legal thing or whatever, it's looking like we'll have the same 22 teams next season in the league. If the top nine and some of the clubs who've really had a good second half to the season, thinking of clubs like Gainsborough Trinity, if it's like this, if it's been like this season, next season, then we're in for a stormer, aren't we?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, we don't know when everything's going to restart anyway, do we? But it's a strong division, very, very strong division. Some good quality clubs, but I do believe that those clubs will cut their cloth accordingly when we come out of this, and we might see more of a level playing field to a degree with the wages and with people moving from club to club, following that amount of money, because I don't think we're going to see as much money paid to players as we were or have done in the last previous seasons.
And I think players' demands are going to have to be a little bit more realistic as well. You often get it pre-season where you'll get someone who's had a good couple of seasons and they'll know what their worth is in last season's market. But this coming season, whenever it happens, the market will have changed quite rightly, as you say, Swampy. The money won't be sloshing around quite as much. And I think certain players are going to have to lower their expectations for what's going to be in the wage packet at the end of the week.
Yeah, most certainly, because if they don't, they won't
same
be playing
time. Yeah. Are we getting a pay rise, Ben?
Well, that's the end of this end of season MPL show. And a big thank you to Mr. Ian Burke from 26NIL. Where are you off to this weekend, Burke? Anywhere nice?
Yeah, I'm going in the backyard. Have a sit down. We've got some new baby sparrows that have just fledged today.
Lovely.
So that's fantastic news.
James Hayes, a big thank you for joining us as well.
Hold on a second.
I'm going to do it clockwise. You off anywhere this weekend? Anywhere nice? Doing anything? Going to anywhere?
There's no garden for me, but I'm literally about to restart the 2014 playoff final on the Facebook page. It'll be up when the podcast's up if you want to rewatch it anyway.
Okay. Is that where your internet's from, T-Got 2014?
we better finish this call because someone needs to make a phone call in James's house and he needs to get off the internet. Swampe,
yeah. Oh, sorry, that was me dialing. Well, a bit like Berkey, to be honest. I'm lucky I've got two balconies, and on the back balcony, which we've got a huge amount of trees, we're going to see something that very, very few people ever see in the avian world, in the bird world, fledgling magpies. Seeing there's a nest, and they've built the nest so we can look down upon the nest, so we can actually, we'll be able to see them actually hatching and also see them growing, which is interesting. Plus, we have quite a number of woodpeckers, and we're in a canopy, so we actually can, in the canopy, we get lots and lots of bird life, which is fantastic. Opposed to that, apart from that, just enjoying life this weekend. We've got an FC United show a little later on there. And if you guys have got nothing better to do, there's of course Cam Malcolm's. They've got some great artists and live stuff on this afternoon. And then there's a live game as well, Ben, isn't there? I'm led to believe.
Yeah, it's FC United against Warrington, 4-4 draw.
That's on live. The whole game.
Ruined the ending. Sorry. I do apologise.
So that's what I'm up to, Ben. What are you up to, Ben?
I'm interviewing footballers this afternoon, so that's good. Simo, just before we go, what are you off anywhere now?
Well, how could I follow Johnny Two Balconies?
Johnny, I know. Johnny Two Balconies.
Well, I'm phoning a man about rugby.
There we go.
There you go.
That is the end for the NPL show. We will be back next week with the weekly show.
How's that the end then, if you're back next week? This is the end. We're back next week.
The monthly show. A big thank you to James Hayes. Big thank you to Swampy. Big thank you to Simo. Big thank you to Berkey. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for listening. And you all take care. And we'll speak to you very soon. Bye-bye.